Okay, Marissa Mitchell is with us. Marissa, like, you bring so much sunshine and light to the morning show. You are from, no wait, you came from Atlanta, right? And then here to DC? Okay, what made you want to do that move, girl? I think I would have stayed in Atlanta.
I know, it was a big jump and a big change. And I get that question probably more than anything.
So really?
It's funny that you're starting with that because the viewers asked me too. It just, even though Atlanta's home for me, you know, born and raised, I went to my undergraduate institution, Emory University there. I worked at the Fox station in Atlanta, so I'm still within the company. I got to a point where I had reached my peak in terms of position. I was reporting and I was anchoring. I was also shooting video. People don't know this, but I've been half photographer in every news job that I've had leading up to this one.
Okay, well, that would have made me take the job. Like when they were like, hey, you can work on the morning show and you don't have to haul around your own camera.
Oh,
I would have been like,
gosh, I don't know. I did it for 10 years, a long time. I worked in Tennessee, Alabama, and in Atlanta. And so when I finally made it back home, I got to the point that even though I was anchoring one show every night, an 11 p.m. show, so I was working nights in Atlanta, I wanted to anchor full time and to be able to really pour into news on the desk. And I wanted to do more hosting and interview celebrities and do features as well. And so when I kind of carved that out for me, like what that next step would be, I knew that that would require leaving home. And so I opened myself up to other opportunities because I had outgrown where I was.
Yeah.
To put it plainly. And the opportunity to grow was not at my current station.
So, and for people that don't know that are listening, I mean, when we say like bring your own camera, like you would literally holler out, like how many pounds do you think that camera was?
Oh my gosh. When you count the camera, the tripod, I would say anywhere, maybe about 25 pounds. And then I also had a bag. And so my mic was in there or anything else that I would need technically. But it was to the point where my back used to start hurting. I messed up so many dresses and skirts because my bag would rub up against the fabric. And so it was a whole thing. And looking back on it, I can't believe that I did it. And for as long as I did it, because not only would I pitch stories, most of them were my stories from start to scratch. Every now and then I would get assigned stories, but I would go in for an editorial meeting, leave that meeting, drive myself to where the shoot was, shoot the story, come back, edit the story, and then look pretty, the best I could look, and stand in front of a camera and present it and anchor an hour-long program. So I did the job of three people.
That is like true love for the profession. Give us an example when you were a baby journalist. Like, where did you get out and then realize like you did not have your microphone cord?
Oh, I never had that happen.
You did?
Fortunately. I would even have like a little notepad where I would go, okay, mic, check, whatever.
And you're good.
When you get do it for so long, it's second nature. You're like, hey, I need this, or you figure it out, right? And you always have a backup to the backup with you in your car at all times. So I never left any equipment, but I did have times where I struggled to make it to a live shot, you know, and I'm sweating bullets and literally running out of the car and standing into a camera and going in 5 seconds. I mean, that has happened on numerous occasions. So,
Wow. That's pretty impressive. You must be an organized woman in real life. I mean,
I try to be about some things, not everything. I wish I was organized about some other things, but, I love the craft and I was willing to do it no matter what. And I wouldn't trade those days for anything because those days made me a better anchor.
Yeah, make you a better journalist.
And what reporters, are going through in the field.
So tell us this, you grow up in Atlanta. I mean, you obviously, I don't know if you consider Tyler Perry a friend or not, but I mean, you spoke when he opened his huge studio. You spoke in front of Oprah Winfrey. I mean, I would have crapped my pants right there. I would have been like, I'm sorry, Miss Winfrey, I'll be right back. I mean, so did your family know Tyler Perry? How did you get connected? Are your parents big time producers? Are you about to tell us that your parents are huge producers?
No, actually, I'm the first and only and I wouldn't consider myself famous, but I'm the first and only, I guess, person on television, and that's journalism, media, acting, whatever, in my family, right? So I'm the one.
Okay, you're first generation. Okay, got
first
it.
First generation. Okay. In this thing. And when it comes to Tyler Perry, a funny story. Yes, I covered the opening of the Tyler Perry Studios. That was at the end of 2019. But I was actually a stand-in for House of Pain many years ago. I believe that was in 07 or 08 when he first got started. He was in a warehouse in Atlanta on Croc Street, super, super small. And I was a stand-in for actresses on that show. And I was going to be a stand-in in Why Did I Get Married? They called me and said, we would like you for 3 months I was going to be Tasha Smith's character, her stand-in. But I found out that I had a full tuition scholarship to Northwestern in Evanston, Illinois, to get my master's in journalism the very same week. And I'm like, Northwestern? But I always think back and I wonder what would have happened, because he uses a lot of the same people in all of his projects, and he has so many projects, and I love acting. And that's something about me a lot of people don't know. I've been in several community plays back home, directed a play. I love to act. I think you get some of it on some of my Instagram and TikToks, and maybe when I did Patti LaBelle in the Halloween show, you can see some of that in there. But I love to act.
Really?
And so when I heard about the opening of the studio, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to go there and I have to cover it. So I actually pitched that at the station where I was working. I had no idea it would be as big as it was. I mean, Beyonce was there, Halle Berry, you said Oprah. And that was actually my third run-in with Oprah. Second interview, but third run-in. Actually, fourth run-in.
Oh God, you girls are like best friends at that point. I mean, at least you're like... You know Oprah. I mean, I met her once on a red carpet for the Kennedy Center. I mean, she's one of those people that, you know, you've met many celebrities, but there are some celebrities that are just like bigger than like, I don't know. There's just this whole aura around them. There's a circle around them. Some celebrities are very not like that. Like even I've interviewed Meryl Streep. I don't know. She didn't have a big star quality about her. But when Oprah Winfrey walks in the room, it's like, there's something about her that's like people, I don't know, like the carpets, you know, part ways. Like
that is so true. Even celebrities are in awe, you know, like the biggest celebrities, like, oh my gosh, that's Oprah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of celebrities, like they don't have that. I don't know. It's saying.
Something else is special. Yeah.
So how did you, okay. So you end up speaking at Tyler Perry's big studio opening. Now, was that because you're like associated with the news? Did he reach out to you directly and say, Marissa, how did that come about?
Well, what I did was I covered the red carpet. I wish I was selected to speak at anything affiliated with Tyler Perry Studios.
Okay,
let's
got
put that out into the atmosphere. Let's manifest that.
I've said it twice, so it's going to happen. It's going to, I'm like, you spoke like, you can rewrite
it. I was just there covering it. And, but I, you know, I had covered other things that Tyler Perry had done, you know, previously, but it was a great night.
So, okay. And you've interviewed a fair amount of celebrities, Aretha Franklin, obviously all the big ones that we said. Who has been the most interesting, I guess, to interview?
Interesting to interview. That's a great question. And one I've never really thought about. I would have to say probably Cicely Tyson.
Really?
The late, great Cicely Tyson. And the reason why is because she has the ability to make you feel like you're the only person in the room. And when she would look at you, you felt like she was really looking at your soul. And it's kind of like she spoke with intention. And I think a lot of celebrities, they're pushing a project or whatever it is, but you could tell that she really wanted to connect with you in that moment. And she spoke with me about just really enjoying getting her flowers later in life, because, you know, Cicely Tyson had acted for like 70 years. And I think it was probably in her last 20 where she got the respect and the due that she should have gotten. And a lot of that is just because the time that she came up in, you know, we were in a different place in our country. So to have been able to be in her presence and to have her reflect on that and her journey, I mean, just a year before her passing was something really, really special. So that's probably the most interesting and special, because I felt like she was so open with me in a way that I wouldn't have expected for someone, you know, you just met.
Okay, well, you just nailed it. I mean, how many people do you interview? And you interview a lot, right? Especially celebrities. Lots of times they're there, like you said, they're there to promote something. They're a part of a junket. They're sort of knocking out a list. Like, they don't, you know, I think it's very forgettable for most of them. So that's amazing that she had that, like, moment with you. Because I consider her just a huge legendary star. I mean, that she took that moment.
Yeah.
So tell us, okay, so you take this job, you decide to leave Atlanta after all these years, you come here to DC, you're coming to a legendary, you know, morning show where you're now replacing some well-known personalities that had been there for years. Did you have any apprehensions? I've asked this about, you know, Jeanette, like all of you guys kind of coming in, because it's very difficult sometimes to follow like an act like that. I'm sure people have tweeted at you, you know, you're this, you're that, we're so-and-so. It's, how have you taken all that?
That's a great question, Sarah. And honestly, because I did some reflecting on this actually last month, because I had hit my 1 year mark at the station. And because of what I've gone through professionally, I've been promoted, I've been passed over, I've been the person, you know, who got the big assignment, I've been the person who didn't get an assignment. All of those highs and lows throughout my career, I think, made me a very special candidate to step into Fox 5 DC at that time.
So okay.
Honestly, yes, I did get the hate mail. I got the, you know, the social media hateration. But I was so excited about this opportunity that I said, you know what? They'll see. And to be patient, because I understand that the people who have left the stations were great people and still huge in the market. And I have the most respect.
Sure,
for them.
Absolutely.
So that's a huge change for viewers. And I think we all have to be patient with the process. And I just knew if I stayed true to myself, I can only be me. And hopefully over time, viewers will see that and appreciate it. Maybe not in the same way, but in a different way. And so it was easier than I thought it would be. I just kind of coasted and leaned into my faith, and I stayed focused. And I've had that conversation with Jeanette too. And Jeanette was like, girl, I'm glad you went first, because I actually started a couple of months before Jeanette did. And I think that even helped her, because I took the brunt of it.
You're like, great, thanks a lot. You know, I finally leave Atlanta and then this. But what about, did the race part bother you too? You know, I saw people tweet things, you know, oh, they're just replacing a Black woman with a Black woman. Mm. Or they're, you know, and I've certainly replaced other women, but I've never had the race part come into it. Tell us what that was like, because I think, God, that's so freaking offensive for, you know, someone that's so, you know, esteemed as you are. You have all your experience, and then, I don't know, I took it as offensive, but how did you take it?
Well, I've been dealing with that my whole life, Sarah. I think a lot of, you know, Black people, whether it's, you know, the school you got into, oh, well, it's just because, and it may not be based upon your actual merit. And honestly, I just tuned a lot of it out. I tried my best not to read. I mean, I think it's important to know what people are saying, but it wasn't something that I dwelled on or over for days or weeks on end. I was so excited about the opportunity because, again, you're talking to somebody really is well over a decade, had been shooting, writing, producing, presenting her own work every single day. That's tough. And so for me, I was like, this is a great opportunity.
You don't care what they're saying. You're like, I don't have to carry that damn 25 pounds. Say away. I don't care.
Sarah, I literally was like that. I'm like, whatever it is going to be better than what I went through. And so I think I had a very different mindset, which is why looking back on, I was like, you know what? I was the perfect person because I couldn't help but focus on how great the opportunity was compared to what I had been through previously. But again, whether it was race or, you know, people missing other people or whatever grievances they had, I knew that I was just going to focus on being the best Marissa that I can be, get to know the community, be myself, and over time, they'll see it.
I love that.
Yeah.
You touched upon career disappointments. What do you think has been the biggest career disappointment? Or maybe I always think now they're really lessons, you know? But it's hard to get to that place sometimes. So what do you think a career moment has been that's you've grown from, or you thought, oh, this is so disappointing, but something good came of it?
Yeah, I would have to say probably not one disappointment, but the length of time that it has taken me to realize my dream compared to some of my peers. Mm. You shouldn't compare yourself, but it happens.
We've got
to be honest with that thing.
I do this all the time. And doesn't it suck when someone who has like no followers or experience, and then in 2 or 3 years, they're like hosting in New York City. You're like, what? She's terrible.
Right. And it's like, wait, I had to go get my bachelor's degree, my master's degree, work at 2 newspapers, 4 television stations. And, you know, but what I've learned from it all is that I believe in God person, that I believe what he has for me is so special that it takes more training. It takes more time. It takes more, not just professional experience, but life experience. Mm. There are some interviews and stories that I can do now in a way that I could have never done had I not gone through what I went through. So I stopped looking to the left and the right and again, focus on doing my thing. And it's made my journey a lot easier. But I definitely went through a period, I would probably say actually right before moving up here, when I was just like, why do I have to move to get the opportunity? But I just have to trust that everything works out the way it's supposed to work out. In DC, the whole entire DMV, they have welcomed me with open arms. And it's been a fantastic first year. And I'm so glad to be here. And I'm holding on that there is a reason that everything happened the way that it did.
Oh, I mean, don't you think? It is so hard. And I feel like for me, it always had, like, I always really realized the reason like 5 years later, which is really like sucks because that's like 2 months, like, such a long right? time. But yeah, I mean, I think that's so great. Like it is a lesson and it does take time. Talk to us about your faith. You mentioned your faith a couple of times and I love that. And some other people that have done these episodes have talked about being religious or raised in the church. Why is it important for you to have faith?
Oh my, because I'm nothing without it. I have to have something to hold on to. I would not be doing this, talking to you right now, if I didn't have faith. I had a vision when I was 16 of where God is going to take me professionally. And I believe it's my calling. And there were so many times when I said, I can't do this. This is too much. But because of that, that's been sometimes the only reason why I stayed in it. And so, and I know people believe in different things. For me, it's God. I'm a Christian. And it's just, there is no me without my faith.
Yes. So growing up, were you raised in the church? Like, did you go? I mean, I grew up Catholic. You know, we went to church every Sunday. So you guys went to mass or you went to church every week.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up, you know, believing in God. And you've obviously carried that faith with you.
Yes, I grew up Baptist in a good old Southern Baptist church. Fire and brimstone.
Tell me specifically about the vision. So like, did God come to you in a dream? Did you see something? I love it. I mean, I get signs. I will often just say, okay, God, show me a sign. And then something will happen. I'll be like, okay, I think this is the sign, right? So did you have a sign or did you have like a vision? Like, how did that happen?
It's so crazy that you're asking me this because only literally less than one hand the people know about the vision. But I will tell you.
Okay, yeah.
So I was asleep and I had a dream. I thought it was a dream at the time that I was in a dressing room and all these people were running around. People had headsets like you have one right now. And I didn't know where I was. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, what's going on? And people are doing my makeup, just people everywhere. And I had on a pink robe. And I remember this guy saying, Miss Mitchell, we're ready for you. Now I was 16 years old at the time that I had this dream. So I get up and he walks me down this dark hallway. And at the same time, I'm like, okay, what's happening? What's going on? We walk up some steps, and right at the top of the steps, I look down and it's a show. There's a full audience there. There's a stage there. And then I get it. And then I go down to the stage and I sit down, and there's this other guy behind the camera, and he goes, 5, 4, 3, 2. And I woke up on 1. After having the dream, I ran in my parents' bedroom. I jumped on their bed and I woke them up. I was like, oh my God, tell you about the dream. So I told him, and I remember my dad, who he passed about 6 years ago, but he goes, Rissa, he used to call me Rissa, that sounds like a vision. And I held on to that because it was so real. Sarah.
So vivid. So vivid. Like you could.
So vivid.
Yeah. I've had a, well, maybe not that kind of experience, but yes, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. It was so clear.
And it was at 16. And even then I knew, like, I've always known I wanted to be in media, but it was just like really, and that's how I think faith works. Sometimes you'll know, okay, I think this is what I'm supposed to do, or I have a heart to do this, but you don't know the how, you don't know the when, you just have to believe. That's what I had.
No, there's so much truth to, I tell people that all that, like, yeah, with your faith, like it is amazing. Like when you, and people believe in different things or different, you know, sort of visions of God or whatever, yeah. But whatever it is, you know, amazing things happen. I think when you do, you know, sort of turn your life over to a higher power, whatever you define that as, you know?
Yes.
Talk to me about your family. You grow up in Atlanta. Your parents, I want to tell you, know, I lost my dad when I was young. Losing your parents is so hard, so, so difficult. You lost an uncle that it sounds like you were very close with. So tell me about that. Was your dad sick for a long time? Was it unexpected? How did that happen?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, So when I finished graduate school in Illinois at Northwestern, I then went to Tennessee, worked there for about a year. Then I was in Birmingham for 4 years. So I finally get the job in Atlanta. I'm back home. And my parents had planned this huge homecoming party for me, right? So we had family, even from out of town, like lots of people. I mean, dozens of people at the house. And at the start of it, he had a stroke.
Oh,
yeah, he had a stroke. And so a few weeks later, he passed away. And I was just like, you know, the chances of his, you know, home going lining up literally with my homecoming, it was very, very tough.
Oh, my God.
It was unexpected. And so it was very sad and still devastating in a lot of ways. But it was poetic, too, because he will always be tied to the dream.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he always had been, even when I was a little girl, like helping me, I would do oratorical contests in the community and churches and at schools. And he would work with me on speaking and help me with my writing. And so for it to happen that way, in a weird way, it was meant to be. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it was.
You don't want to lose parents and family and children, but I don't think it was by coincidence that it happened the way that it did.
And how many years had your parents been married or together at that point?
Oh, they've been together 30 years. 30 years.
When he passed away.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How's your mom doing? Your poor mother. I mean, you know, she doesn't know life without him. I mean, that's like.
Yeah, it's been really tough. But my mom is strong. She's the strongest woman I know. And we talk, you know, we have our mother-daughter conversation. Then we have like our sister conversations. And she has shared so much with me. But I have to say, when it comes to death, that was nothing that my parents hid from me and my sister coming up. It was like, well, you need to know how to do this because the day is going to come where I'm not going to be here. I mean, they told us this when we were little kids.
Really? Wow.
All the time, and prepared us for that day. And so, you know, she went through and is going through her grief like anybody would. But I have to say that I think she's is handling it better than I could have ever imagined. And I love her so much. And I told her, I was like, man, if I ever become like half the woman you are, then I'm going to be fine. You know, I'm going to be just fine. But the family is good. My sister, she has a little boy now who just turned 4. She lives down the street from my mom. So they're always great. At the house. You know, she's not by herself. She has a huge friend network. So everybody's good. And I felt comfortable leaving, you know, because I knew that she would be okay.
Wow. That's amazing that they would say that to you. I mean, most people like never talk about death. It's like so overwhelming. That's like really insightful that they would say that. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a matter of fact, my dad used to always say, he was like, Rissa, when my head gets cold, you're going to have to do A, B, and C. And one of the first things I did when I viewed his body, I touched his head and I knew, I was like, okay, it's here now.
Wow.
That was the first thing. Yeah.
Oh my God. That is like wild.
I know.
That's really, quite emotional. I mean, I'm sure for you, like thinking about it and your sister. Oh my God. Yeah. That's a lot.
It's very emotional, but I think that's where faith comes in. My parents raised us since we were itty bitty to believe and to lean on scripture, because life happens. You know, we have all kinds of losses in our lives. And that's the best gift my parents ever gave me. And that is introducing me to my faith, because that has gotten me through so much. And so even though it hurts, I think that I've dealt with it better than most, because they equipped me to.
I would say so. I mean, you're able to like talk about it. And I, you know, I'm sure you have private moments too, but I mean, you speak so well of it. And a lot of people, you know, it's very difficult. They can't talk about it. So that's amazing.
Our loved ones never leave us. They're just with us in a different way. Yeah.
Totally. Yes. You feel that, know it for sure.
Oh, yes.
Tell me, okay, so what, you know, you make this big move here. What's been new or surprised you about DC? Because it's an interesting town to, you know, I'm sure with Atlanta, people probably grow up there, they stay there, you kind of know people. Here, it's a very, some people have a hard time adjusting because it is a transient place. You know, people come, they better their career, they move on. The dating scene's a hot mess. I mean,
you got that right.
We'll get to that. But what about DC surprised you? Did you anything you liked or you didn't know? Or?
That's a great question. Honestly, I don't think I can give it a fair look right now, because I came in a pandemic. You know, I started in September of 2020. Everything was closed. You know, things are more open now. And so I don't think that I'm getting a chance to see the real DC. But for what I've seen so far, people are nicer than I expected.
Oh, okay. Nicer than Atlanta? No, though. No way.
Nicer than Atlanta, but still nice. Oh, the brunch scene is off the chain. I did not know that DC was like it when it came to and comes to brunches. And I think, too, I think DC has a reputation of being a little stuffy.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's some of that, but I think there are a lot of fun and funny people here that probably deserve more shine.
It has become a, I don't know, more laid back, I think, place.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot more like art scene, music scene, great food. Like a lot of that's come up, I think, in the past 10 or 15 years. You know, it's not so political. Yeah, I do think that. But no, wait a minute. Are you married? Or are you dating? Or, okay, you're single. And you're,
yes, I'm the most single person you'll ever talk to. There is nobody, okay? I'm single.
I don't know. Sierra Fox has been on this podcast. You girls may need to hang out. She is like,
we actually have a couple of times.
Oh, good.
We were supposed to a few weeks ago, but I don't know our schedules. But yes, I have hung out with Sierra Fox.
Okay, and you two baddies couldn't find anybody. You girls are hot.
You know what? You're
telling me you're alone at the bar? Okay.
I think the more you have going on, the harder it can be. And then the whole TV thing gets in the way too. You don't know who likes you or wants you for you.
Have you been asked out by any viewers and thought about it?
Yes. I've been asked out by viewers, but I've not thought about it.
Why? The ones that asked you weren't that good looking? I mean, in my radio days, I have gone out with some radio listeners.
Well, I mean, maybe I should try that, Sarah. But the thing is, if you come off like a crazed fan, I don't like that. Just say, oh, I think I saw you on TV the other day, and then get to something else. But when it's like, oh my gosh, you're so this, you're so that, I watch you every morning, that freaks me out.
Really? But I feel like maybe you need a man that's just like adores you. I mean, not like, you know, trying to like make your bones into wind chimes, but I think you need somebody like
that. That's hilarious. I mean, it's something to consider, Sarah. Maybe I should be more open.
You need a guy that worships you, that will do anything, and that gets up at 3 a.m, drives you to work. That's what you need.
Yeah, that would be nice, because, girl, it's hard. It's hard in these early morning streets.
Okay, by the way, what is your schedule? You get up at, are you up at 3 or 2:30?
Oh, no, I'm up at 1:30. I'm actually at work at 3.
That
and
is
then
rough.
I'm on air at 4.
Ooh, that is brutal. And that is a hard schedule to meet somebody.
Yes, I did have someone fairly recently mention that they might want to take me out. I think he's going to ask me out. But he goes, so like, you can't go out during the week, can you? And I was like, it will be really tough unless it's a Friday. So
lunch dates for me.
Yeah, really. But then some of them are at work, you know.
I know. It's so difficult. It's, yeah. And how are you with that? Like, Sarah Fox is like, she's like not sure if she wants to date right now. She's sort of liking her new life here. Are you, is that like a priority? Is that like kind of the next step? You do want somebody, or are you not sure?
That's a great, y'all always ask these great questions.
I don't know why.
It is not a priority. So I'm like, if it happens, it happens. But at the same time, I'm learning to open myself up to the possibility, because it can't just be all work all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have companionship, and hopefully it'll lead to something real. So I'm more open to it, but it's not a priority.
Yeah, I know. And but sometimes though, that's when it will happen. It will, you know, like kind of when I had given up, and then like I met my husband on an airplane. So, you know, you never know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We're sitting next to each other. So you have no idea, you know, it could be this listener, you know, or viewer.
Well, how did you all start talking on the plane?
Well, see, you probably aren't as messy as I am. I was trashed. And so I sit down next to I'm sure you can see it. I sit down next to this cute guy, and he's got all these weather apps out. He has three or four weather scrolling through the weather. So I was like, you know, what's the deal? Are we getting out of here? I was like, oh, this guy's kind of cute. You know, and he's like, I don't think we are, you know, because they were like, they kept saying, you know, we're going to be delayed. If we hear thunder, we're going to we got to deboard you. And then we're at our max for our team. So they're going to have to get a whole new step. Anyway, we get deboarded, and my girlfriend that I was with, she's like, oh, this guy's kind of cute. Let's invite him to the bar. So we bring him to the bar. I mean, I like passed out in my margarita. He like finished it. We get back on the plane. I have one business card left that had a big coffee stain on it. I give it to him because I had too many crazy listeners ask me out. I was like, this guy's probably wacky. So I give him my card. He emails me, puts his cell phone number in it. We start texting, and then he asked me out, and then, I mean, we've been together now like 8 years, married like 2.
Gosh, that's lovely.
So good, you
thing
never
your friend
know.
Was there, because see, I would never, and that's something my friends tell me. I need to approach. It's okay to approach a guy, or I just have an issue with that.
I did. But I initially made all the moves, and I mean, I don't know if I would have done that except for I was like so drunk. I was like, I don't care, you know. Who's this guy?
It was just a liquid courage, right?
It was a liquid. It worked. So, you know, you never know where you're going to find it. But that's, I did. True. My girlfriend was the one, and she was the one too. Even when I was like sober the next like day or two, she's like, I like this guy for you. She is the one that kind of played matchmaker. So,
oh, that's a good girlfriend.
You never know. I mean, who knows? Who does Wisdom Martin have any decent friends? I mean,
I've asked him that question. He always laughs and he never answers me. Maybe you can get him. I'm like, hey, you have any friends? And he's like, Marissa, her. And the next thing. But yeah, I asked that like in my first month.
Yeah, first month there, you're like, hello, have you got anyone?
I think he just wants to stay out of, you know, all of that, which I understand.
Tell me what you do in your, not that you really have spare time. My God, I mean, you get home, you go to bed for 3 hours, you got to be back at work.
I mean,
okay, you you love to act. Are you currently working on anything? Like, do you have this, don't give the idea away, but do you have this like script? Do you have like a play that you want to do that you've been working on?
No, I don't. Oh, okay. I don't have anything that I've been working on. And I wish there was a way, as you know, it's hard for us contractually to do some things, but hopefully one of these days I would love to do some theater, you know, even local theater, or, you know, try out an audition for a small part in something.
Yes.
On television. That would be a lot of fun.
Okay. They need to let you do that. You know what? Just attach like LLS to it. You know, we give it be like, look, I'm acting for LLS. They'll let you do it.
But so, yeah, we're going to put that out there too. I want to act.
Heck yes. I mean, they ought to let you be in the Nutcracker, for God's sakes, here down at the Kennedy Center. I'm putting that out there. What other hobbies? Are there any other hobbies that we don't know about that you enjoy or you're like, oh, I'd love to try that?
Well, I do like festivals. I love concerts. Like, my friends will tell you I'm the concert queen. It's been harder, you know, with COVID, but even that's coming back. But cruises and concerts, those are my jam.
Really? Cruises?
Oh my God. I love cruise life.
Great place to like meet somebody. Really? Okay. What's your favorite cruise that you've taken?
Probably Royal Caribbean. I love their cruises. I've done carnivals like more times than I can count, but Royal Caribbean is probably my favorite. And I went to Nassau, the Bahamas. That was a great trip.
I so want to go on one. Now, what do you love about it? What do you love?
You've never been on a cruise?
I've been like on a really lame like one nighter to like Nova Scotia from Portland, Maine.
Oh,
yeah,
you have to do a real cruise.
I know. It's like who takes a cruise and goes north? I mean, you know, for God's sake, it's like that's how bad mine was. Like, I mean, right. I'm like already in Antarctica practically in Maine. And then we go to Nova Scotia. Lame.
Oh, yeah.
What do you love about it? Is it the people? Is it the atmosphere? And like, do you notice that you're moving all the time?
Well, actually, you might notice that in the beginning, but you're going to have so much fun. You forget all that stuff. I love everything about cruise trivia nights. I did win Michael Jackson trivia night on Carnival one year, and people recognized me on the ship for like the duration of the trip as the girl who won the Michael Jackson. Yeah, I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan.
Really?
So I'm here for bingo nights. I'm here for karaoke. And the movie nights, like I just love, everybody's happy to be there. That's the thing about cruises. And you get people let their hair down and you get to know people from all over the world, all over the country. And some of whom are now my friends on Facebook who I've met on cruises.
Oh my God,
but
I love it.
I just love, and it's all encompassing too. And it's a lot cheaper than going to a resort or whatever.
Oh my God, how much fun. Now, wait a minute. Did you get to see Michael Jackson in concert before he passed?
Oh, I did it. How unfortunate.
Oh my God, that would have been, yeah. I mean, he didn't, well, I guess he was planning that last world tour, right? When he died. Yeah, it was like
this
the final,
it.
This is it. This mm-hmm. is it. Who's been the best concert? Like, who do you love to go see?
The best concert I would have to say a tie between Bruno Mars and Beyonce.
Okay, I haven't seen either one, but I bet they're so amazing, like in concert.
Oh, yeah, but I've also seen Janet Jackson. I've seen Cardi B, Elton John. Oh, gosh, so many people. Outkast. But I like a lot of pop, hip-hop, R&B, gospel, some rock. But yeah, I just love music. I love music.
I know, right? And there's nothing better than like a great concert atmosphere. You know, it's just the whole vibe, right?
I love concerts. That's where all my money goes to, like shows and cruises and cosmetics. All the C's.
Cruises, concerts, cosmetics. That's my whole paycheck. Oh my God. Marissa, what a fun life. I mean, okay, we're going to do rapid fire questions, but I want to come back to one thing because I think a lot of people listening can identify this. And I think we're in a space, I love being able to talk about experiences, but you kind of had mentioned that your whole life you'd been dealing with, I think maybe it was like judgment about your color, your race. Do you feel like that? How has that played in? I think that's an important story to tell. I don't know how you'd label it, racism or discrimination. Do you feel like you're so beautiful? I mean, how do you think that's happened to you or you've come up against that?
Against racism? Wow. No one has ever asked me that before.
They haven't? What is wrong with people? I'm like a C-list like interviewer. Well, no one's asked you.
I'm always doing the question asking. No one ever asked me anything.
That's true. It's not like Nick Cannon's going to do, oh, hey, by the way. Yeah. Hey, we got 2 minutes. So by the way, yeah, tell me about that.
Well, it's one of those things. I've always gone to, you know, mixed race schools, even in grade school. So I've always been exposed to people of different races and religions, just creed, color, all of that. And I'm thankful that my parents made that happen, because I think because I was exposed to so much at a young age, I have not felt the tinge of racism as maybe some of my peers have. Having said that, racism is very real. I think we always judge people based upon how they look, you know, and that's whether it's color or height or weight or, you know, whatever. We're always judging.
Yeah.
And one thing for me is, I know my parents would tell me, you're going to always have to work harder in a lot of spaces, and work twice as hard to get half as far, you know. Mm. And when you know that, you just push yourself in all the areas of life you can to allow your work to speak for you. And I think that you and I are now in a space where things are a lot better than they were back in the day. And so whenever I come against anything related to that, good, bad, or indifferent, I think about all that my ancestors have gone through.
Yeah.
And I know that my load is a lot lighter than the ones they had to carry. And I think that it's a privilege and an honor to continue on the journey.
I love that saying, like, your ancestors' wildest dreams, because, you know, you think 150 years ago, I mean, they never even dreamt that they would be free
would not be doing
and living.
This.
I mean, right? I mean, that's really amazing, but it still sucks, right? It's still there. Mm-hmm. And what do you want people to know? You know, we are in this, like, very divisive state right now as a nation, which I hate, because I think people really do love their neighbors, you know, regardless of color, when they see them in person, not on the internet, you know. But what do you want people to know? What do you want other women to know? You know, women of color. What do you think people should know about, like, racism in the workplace that maybe they don't know of, or that it's easy to judge online?
I think they need to first know and appreciate that it exists. I think a lot of times we throw out things like colorblind. No, there's no such thing as colorblind. We see color and it matters. We should see color and we should celebrate and appreciate the diversity, number one. And I think we should listen to each other. Ultimately, I think we're so, and you said it, in this social media climate where we're all just talking at each other. And I don't like what you have to say, so I'm going to cancel you, or I'm going to block you, or, you know, that we don't talk to each other. And I think conversation is the beginning of finding real solutions. And so in some ways, social media is great. We're more connected than ever before, right? The door is open to communicate, but we have to change our perception and use those channels to work toward bringing us together in a real thoughtful way where we can appreciate our differences, because they're important. So I would just say to see the differences and don't be too afraid and too close-minded to sit down and talk them through.
Yes. And I mean, look, I hate being online because I'm guilty of it. You know, you get down this thread. Travis Scott is an example, right? I'm like, oh, you know, Travis Scott's awful and cancel. And I'm like, you can't go online and say this. You don't know all the situation. You know, I mean, maybe he's an awful person in real life, but you don't know him. You know, you don't work with it. You don't know, you know, and that's just one example. I mean, you know, every day we're inundated with different situations or race or story. It must be hard as a journalist to report these stories. I mean, now at Fox 5, of course, we're encouraged to kind of have our opinion, but it's got to be difficult to report it every day and then not jump in and say something. I think it would be
hard. Yeah. And it's also, even when you're not, I mean, I've tried to be objective in, you know, especially when it comes to news. Now, when we're talking Celebrity Dish or other things, like, you know, we say whatever, that's different. But when it comes to the news of the day, and that's locally and international news, I've always aimed to be very objective. But I think to your point, we've become so divisive and surface focus that even though I'm objective, people will say, well, it's coming from you. You must feel this way about this subject. And it's like, no, I don't feel any kind of way. I'm just letting you know what's going on. So people are watching with their own little antennas that are going in the way that they want them to go. And all you can do is just try to be as fair as possible and let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely. All right. I want to do some lightning round questions with you.
Okay.
Favorite cosmetic. Do you have a favorite brand? Are you obsessed with eyeshadows? What's your favorite makeup?
Okay. Favorite brand, MAC. Favorite product, any good lipstick.
Oh, I know. I love.
Yeah. If I don't have anything else on, I have to have one lipstick.
How many lipsticks do you think you own?
At least 30.
Oh, that's a lot. Wow. I gotta work on my lipstick game. Okay. I love it. You're a faith, God loving woman. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? So what are your, when it comes to like your career, your life, what are your prayers about for 5 years from now?
My prayer is for my work to touch as many people as possible all over the world in whatever form that will take. And to be married with at least one kid.
Ooh, I love it.
5 years.
Don't worry.
Yeah, that's what I want for myself.
It'll be a hot viewer from D.C.
Well, Sarah, I'm going to be more open to that. You gave me something to really think about.
Oh, God, we'll proceed with caution. Oh, my God, it'll probably be some nutsack.
Yeah, I'm blaming
Sarah Fraser told me to come down here. You crazy. It'll be some whack. I'll be like, oh, my God, I'm never listening to that Fraser woman again. Anyway, I did go out with some listeners. It was crazy. Okay, tell me a question. Do you have a celebrity question that was like embarrassing or you're like, oh, I wish I could redo that? Like, ever have a moment with a celeb you're like, oh, redo?
Yeah. Oh, and I don't want anyone to not like this person because I think she's great.
Oh, I am so mad. I put my foot in my mouth all the time. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, I remember covering, it was a women's event in New Orleans in 2008, I want to say, or 06, I can't remember. But it was after Hurricane Katrina. And I was there, a young reporter. I was working for a magazine at the time. And Jane Fonda, Jennifer Hudson, Kerry Washington, all these great women were there. And it was a news conference. And I got the first question. And I remember the publisher of the magazine saying, well, if you get to talk to Kerry Washington, make sure you ask her about her keys to success. Now, mind you, this whole event is about uplifting women after Hurricane Katrina. And it's like super deep and it's for charity and all this stuff. And I get the first question. I go, and there were at least 20 women who are on stage as a part of this event. And I go, Kerry Washington, what are your keys to success?
Was that like a book or something of hers?
And it wasn't. And she was like, this event is not about me. It's about the women.
I would have done this too. Oh, this would have happened to me. And you're sitting there going, oh, God.
Yeah. And I'm like, he told me that, you know, it was the weirdest thing. And I felt so bad. And there were other reporters after, like, we are so sorry. And it took me months really to understand because I'm so young. You know, I was right out of undergrad, super, super green. I didn't know that that was a question I should have asked her when she was by herself or, you know, maybe after they got the real questions out of the way. I just knew that my boss told me to make sure I get that question in.
And, so you were like, yes, I'm going to knock this one out. I'm going to do this one first. And then she's like, I will not be talking about it. You're like, oh, okay. Well,
yeah, that went left. But other than that, I think I've had good. I think there were good questions for celebrities.
Tell me about your favorite food or drink on a cruise ship. What do we need to eat or order?
Ooh, I love the omelets. Omelets are great on cruise ships.
Oh.
So make sure you get that. And most cruise ships are big into buffets. So if you're here for the buffet, you're going to get plenty of buffet action. So yeah, that's my favorite food on a cruise ship.
Okay, I love it. Basically,
with Heinz 57 sauce on top.
Oh, yum. I love part of this interview really was good. Like basically a promotion for Royal Caribbean. I'm like, tell me everything about it. right.
They need to cover my next cruise.
They do. Oh my God. This is so much fun. I mean, I got to come in the studio because I feel like I could hang out with you in real life. And now I'm trying to think of who I know.
I would love for you. Yeah. I mean, you bring so much. You're a light. I think you're so funny and you're so smart. That's the thing. People think that, oh, you're just funny and fun. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of thought to do what you do. Research. You knew so many things about me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Oh, I did say that somewhere. So, no, you're wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot. I love my Fox 5 family, and I just love seeing there's been so many great new faces, and it's awesome. And I know I've been in your shoes in a different way, but coming in after people, and it's always challenging, you know, and I hate when people rock your confidence because you're feeling so great and you want to do a great job, and then sometimes, I don't know, somebody can say something and you're just like, oh, what am I doing? So, but, you know, you have right. wonderful faith and confidence, which is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tell everyone, we know we can see you in the morning, Marissa, but tell people where they can follow you online and on your TikTok. Tell us all the places we can see you.
Sure. Well, if you look up Marissa Mitchell on anything, you'll find me. Marissa Mitchell on Instagram, Marissa Mitchell on TikTok, Marissa M Fox 5 on Twitter.
Love it.
And, yeah, that's just me in a nutshell.
I love it. Well, people are going to be shooting their shot after this interview. So even more, more dates.
As long as you have a J-O-B, you're at least 6 feet tall.
Oh boy, we got requirements. Send in all your, send your numbers in. All right, Marissa, this was so much fun. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I had a blast, Sarah. Thank you. Locks. So here she is, she's Sarah Frazier, brought to you by Fox.